Welcome to Smart Cherry's Thoughts. This is Sai from India.
Well, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Ria. Firstly, thank you very much for coming to my show.
Sure. No, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So I thought to tell about you and the work that you are doing to my audience.
Sure. I can just dive right in. Sure. So, I work in Microsoft. I actually work inside of Teams Engineering. So I'm part of, I think it's like 2,500 people now that we have that actually help build Teams, like Teams that we're actually using right now, or anybody that is using Microsoft Teams all over the world. And I'm in like a unique space because I'm part of the ecosystem team. So I work with our largest and most strategic partners that are partners to Microsoft, and I help them sort of understand what it takes to bring their service as an app into our app store. And so I kind of manage the entire process with them. I help them envision like what their app could be. I help also educate them a little bit too about like what are the features you can develop against. I'm also their SME around unblocking them, just making sure, hey, do they have a good experience when it comes to developing on our platform? And if they run into issues or let's say they run into things that they want to improve, I have sort of that power, which is really cool, to bring that feedback back to our core engineering team and say, hey, listen, let's make this better. We have these big partners who are developing apps. Like, maybe this is something we need to improve. And so I'll write like a functional spec, or I'll write like a bug report or things like that to say, hey, like here's the issue and here's how we need to improve it. And so once the partner sort of done developing their app, I actually help them get through the App Store submission process. So just like any development team or company would go through like an App Store process, much like the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store. Same thing with us. We have a submission and review process, and we help them through that and make sure that they get through it and they can actually get their app landed into the public app store. So I know it's a long story of like what I do. It's hard to explain sometimes, but it's a fun job. So,
You are from?
oh, where am I from?
Yeah.
I was actually born in DC, and I live in the DC area, the Washington DC. But I come from my family. I'm actually half Iranian and half Spanish. My parents actually met in English class, so I can speak a little Farsi. I can speak a lot more Spanish. So I come from like a sort of a mixed or dual sort of nationality household. But I was born in the US, so.
So working in Microsoft Teams, how is it? And how is working in this product development?
It's really cool, actually. So I've been in Teams for about 5 years. I think it'll be 5 years in November, which is so I guess technically 4.5. I came on originally in 2018, and as you know, about a year later, right, things sort of tanked with COVID. Like everything went, sort of the world went kaput, like with COVID. And what was really interesting is kind of being at the center of having of being in a product that was so crucial in terms of helping the world communicate. So, and not just the world, I would say also children too, because Teams obviously is very big in education. And so trying to make sure that, everything is ready, is up to snuff, that, things are online. At the time when I first joined Teams, I actually owned all of Teams for US government. So I managed federal government and Department of Defense, which was millions and millions and millions of people. And so when COVID first hit, I had to really be there and say, hey, how do we make sure that the entire US government can still fully operate using Teams, which is very, secure for them and was approved for the government? How can they still like coordinate and meet and all that stuff? First couple weeks, like I worked 7 days a week. Like it was tough, but it was the best, most rewarding work just because I saw how people were really kind of able to continue US government services and help US citizens remotely. It was very new for the government, but it was a cool sort of transition to see and be a part of, to see how especially like most folks who usually go into work, that now they're starting to work from home. And so I love being a part of that. That was actually really, really cool.
So what changes have been done after you coming into Teams?
Oh, that's a good question. So, I still own, like today, for apps, I own government, legal, and healthcare from an app perspective. From my previous job, and even today, I really am a big advocate for US Gov. I have a lot of experience. I used to work alongside government for most of my career, before joining Microsoft, and even my first couple years at Microsoft. So something that I've really kind of, the people can actually see is on our documentation. I don't know if people are familiar with, Microsoft Learn, which is what used to be called like Microsoft Docs and used to be called TechNet. And anyways, now it's called Microsoft Learn. But all of our technical documentation, you'll notice that consistently there is a caveat or sort of like a purple square that highlights or calls out what's different for US government. I was a big proponent of that. That was a big change that I helped implement to make sure that anytime we have feature releases, that we're including information about how it's different for US government, which is such a big population. Because again, Microsoft has three separate US government clouds, and so outside of the commercial one. And so it really helps a lot of users understand how they can implement their technology for their environment without feeling like left behind. Before that, people were really lost and didn't know from a team's perspective, hey, like what's different for me? Like how does this matter? So that was a big thing. Another thing that has been really huge is also rethinking about how teams build products for government. So a lot of times, features were sort of an afterthought when I first joined, and I helped sort of change that mindset. Now we're really leading the charge with saying government is not an afterthought. Government is thought of in the beginning whenever we plan any feature, even if it's like a button or like a network change or something. Government is always a part of that, and they have to have a plan for that, which is really cool. So now you've seen a lot of feature releases come out really a lot faster than what they used to be, because of me sort of driving that. I'm sure I made like I didn't make a lot of friends my first couple years, but I was glad to speak up for a population that needed to be heard and that does such good work. So that was exciting, and I still do that today with Teams platform. So it's pretty cool.
And how proud you are because you're working one of the most using application in the world and most fast growing application in the world.
Yeah, that's right. We do say that Teams is the fastest growing application in Microsoft history. It's pretty amazing, I would say. My recommendation, and this is just something that I thought about just right now. When I wanted to join Teams, oh, actually, sorry, when I wanted to switch roles within Microsoft, I had a lot of people who were giving me advice, and they were like, "Oh no, don't worry about it. Just get into engineering. Just get into something just to get your foot in the door." And they were, giving me recommendations to join other product teams within Microsoft that I really wasn't like super passionate about. And something in my gut told me, no, I really want to be passionate about whatever engineering org I join. And Teams was really one of the ones I was passionate about because I came from SharePoint, and SharePoint and Teams has like such a like a good partnership, and I love collaboration. I feel like I'm a big collaborator myself. So for me, kind of following my gut and saying, hey, go to a product that you're going to love because you're going to be doing it day in and day out, and that which is absolutely true. So for anybody who's ever looking to join into engineering org, like make sure you find a product that you love because you're going to be living, eating, breathing that product for quite some time. And I'm glad I did that because I'm very passionate about Teams and I love what it can do. So that's my sort of advice to the world.
So, what's your role, especially what you do?
On a day-to-day basis, my role is pretty cool because every day is very different. So I have like about 10 companies that I work with, like very large companies. I won't name who they are, but they're very big. And I help them sort of envision what their future is on Teams. So especially owning like legal, government, and healthcare, I help them sort of figure out, hey, if they have a service today, maybe their service is on the web, but how do we bring that web service into Teams? What does it look like? What could they actually build that's really meaningful to the user? And I help a company understand the value add that Teams brings to their service. So a lot of companies might have like, web services that people go and go do things on the web, but sometimes they're missing like that collaboration component, that like chat component or that sharing of content or being able to meet. And so helping a company envision to say, hey, we're going to add a ton of value to our existing user base by having an integration to Teams is really, really cool. I also get to do some design work as well. So I work with, we've got a team of UX designers, but I give them sort of a blueprint to say, what should the app look like? And that's, I've, you know, that's very new for me in this role. I've been doing this role for about a couple years. And it kind of tapped into my creative instinct, which was nice. And I get to kind of make things look pretty, which is really cool in Teams. And so that's really kind of my role, is to help a company build sort of the best, most quality user engaged app they can. And then literally, like, as they're building their app, sometimes it takes a couple months, sometimes it takes 6 months. Some partners take a little bit longer, you know, just depending on their skill set. I meet with them weekly at least, and I help answer like any questions they have. And we do check-ins. I help test their app. I make sure, you know, I review all their code. Like, we do pre-reviews before they go through submission, and then I take them through submission and hopefully get them off on the launch pad to getting advertised and getting into the Teams App Store. So yeah, day to day, it's crazy busy, but it's like that.
Nice. And as a product designer or developer, how you match the business requirement with the engineering thing?
Oh, that's a good question. So when I first joined Microsoft, I joined Microsoft in 2015, and I joined Teams Engineering in 2018. But when I joined Microsoft in 2015, for the first 3 years, I was doing consulting work, and I was working with a lot of customers, Microsoft customers, and helping them envision apps and things like that too. So I had in my head sort of a process of how I can work with customers or companies or people on how to envision an app. So I have a process of how I kind of work with the dev team, with their leadership, to say, what is of value to you? So I kind of start a conversation to say, what are the top three things that your users do? And what are the top three things that are of value to you? Maybe your users don't do this yet, but you want them to. And so I kind of have that start the conversation, but I really figure out and understand, like, what's their market? You know, what is their web service or their app, you know, outside of Teams do today? And how can we bring those core workloads into Teams, especially for a V1? So, like, I always tell partners, I'm like, let's not boil the ocean. Like, we don't have to do everything in a V1, but let's get the core piece of what you want out. So, again, I have this envisioning process that I do. It takes sometimes about 6 to 8 hours total, where I ask a bunch of dumb questions to their entire leadership team and their entire dev team. It helps me figure out, you know, kind of what's important. And then I call myself sort of the team's platform translator. And I say, hey, like, this thing, you know, this theme seemed to like run quite frequently when we were doing envisioning. Here's what it could look like in Teams. And so I do a mock-up or show them examples of other apps that sort of do similar things. And then I say, hey, listen, like, this is what it could be, just to give them context. And then we figure out, and then I work with UX to actually build them designs to show them, say, hey, this is what your blueprint could be. This is what your app could look like. And once they're good with that, I give them the framework and of how to build it. And then they go off and build it. And I kind of oversee that process.
So working for different companies and helping them in improving their service or the product. So when you hear their requirements, how you think, what is your logical thinking? Because different companies have different requirements. Like you said, you have different tasks each day. So how you are able to manage that logical and emotional thing in you and match the logical and emotional thing in organizations that you work for?
You just said something really key, Sai. You said emotional. That is so true. Emotions is such a huge part of this. Just, you know, something, just a tidbit about myself. I went to college many, many years ago. I graduated in 05, so I'm quite old. But I was a psychology major, and I always loved technology, but I loved how people interpreted technology and how they feel about it. And that has been so useful in my role, because managing how people feel about things is so key to whether an app really lands for a user. So for us, like, again, like, I use the business model canvas is a template that I think anybody can really download off the internet. I also use something called a service blueprint. Again, there's a template that you can download on the internet for that. But essentially, I just listen. And that's the key thing with all of this. I listen and I just ask them, again, a bunch of dumb questions. Again, there's like a, I think on strategizer.com, there's a bunch of great envisioning templates that you can anybody can utilize. My what I do for envisioning is sort of a flavor off of that. But again, like I just listen and I ask, not just from like the C-suite, because I want to make sure that leadership is involved, because I want to know like what are their goals for the company. But then I go through and ask marketing, like marketing, what is like big for the company? I ask their head dev, and I even ask like their other like sort of, you know, medium to senior devs, right? Or mid to senior level devs, and say, hey, like, what have you worked on most in the past year? And once I have sort of that understanding of like what's important for the company from the top to sort of the bottom, it gives me a better picture of where the company's going and how invested they are in this. And again, like I just meet with everybody as much as I can and try to listen as much as I can. I take a bunch of notes, and using that, I actually write a functional spec to say, hey, like this is the functional specification of what I think your app should be. And then we talk about it. And I say, hey, listen, like this is a partnership. What is this app you think going to look like? This is, you know, this is my recommendation. What do you think? And so when partners are engaged in that process and feel like they have a stake in what's happening, they become more emotionally invested, right? And then they want to build it. And then they, you know, they figure out, okay, yeah, no, this is a cool way to do things. So that's kind of the beauty of this. I have a partner specifically right now that I'm working with. They're going to launch their app here soon. And they're a wellness company, like an enterprise wellness company. And they manage like healthcare conditions. So like if somebody has high blood pressure or high blood sugar, or they're, you know, they're overweight, they can actually manage all of this information through Teams. And before they used to be separate on web, they used to have a separate mobile app. And now we're bringing all of that into Teams. And it's been so cool to see them sort of flourish and understand this new space and just guide them through this process has been amazing. And I think their app is going to be absolutely huge. Even us at Microsoft are looking at installing it for our own employees, which is really fun. So having that sort of impact, like being able to like even affect, you know, 150,000 employees that we have at Microsoft is pretty cool. So that's exciting.
So being in technology for all these years, working for technology products and services and helping a lot of people and organizations in solving their problems, what do you understood that like how technology is helping human beings in solving their problems? How effective, and out of 100, how much do you think that technology is solving humans' problems?
That's a good question. I think it depends on a lot of things. I'm a big believer that technology should be useful and it shouldn't be something that weighs somebody down, right? It shouldn't take more effort. Like things should be easier. So like, if a partner comes to me and they have an idea and I'm just like, that's just going to be a lot for a user to handle, I actually turn them away. I say no. And they're like, what? I do have the power to do that, but which is really cool. But yeah, I want to make sure that like, you know, what they're building is a good investment of their time as well as, you know, mine. Because I'm a free service to these partners. We don't charge them. It's really to make sure from a team's perspective, the reason why we do this is because we want those high quality apps in our app store. We want people to actually use apps in our app store because it makes things a little bit more cohesive in teams. But yeah, in terms of helping people, I think it's always super key to understand like what's the end goal, not just for the company, but also for the user. So yeah, even though I work with partners and I want to understand what the company goal is, we do build user stories and personas as part of the envisioning process to say, you know, give me what your typical user does in a day, or here's a day in the life, and here's how they would work with your app to do that. And I think that's super, super key. It's like always thinking of the user in mind. And especially with these UX designs, like that's what we think about is like, what is the user experience end to end? We map everything out. So, again, we try to make things easier. We don't want to make things harder to do. Like if things get really convoluted, we tell them, hey, no, like don't include that, or we need to rework this entire process. And usually they're really open to that because I'm the expert coming in, helping them sort of understand, you know, how to do it. So hopefully I answered your question, Sai. Yeah. I did or not, but hopefully I did.
So the previously you have studied or understood the subject called psychology that you have mentioned. So how that experience, which is that subject is very deep. It's like an ocean. You cannot, complete that in all your life. So that is something which is related to human. Human is a product of nature. Human is a energy, is a product of nature. And that subject, relating with the technology subject, which is the product of like teams. Teams is a product of human being. So if I ask you to relate these two subjects, human psychology with the human created product or service, so how that experience is helping you in understanding this?
Yeah, so a couple of things. And I'm also a ProSci certified too, and ProSci is the adoption and change management program or principle. And something that they say in ProSci and psychology as well, that a user needs to see something for seven different ways or seven different times for them to actually like remember it. So that's something that's really fascinating. In psychology too, there's a lot of concepts around how, you know, eye movement on a screen, like what do people kind of naturally go towards? And then we also have what people's home devices are. So I'm an iPhone user, right? I have an Apple Watch, I have an iPad, right? Like there's a lot of people who use those devices. There's a lot of people who use Android devices. What are those sort of like common themes around settings or like share? Like, right, there's like all these common themes around devices that people use at home. And so having that sort of psychology where we don't want people to have to relearn everything every time they're in an app, that's super, super key. Because if you make it harder for them to learn, they're most likely to not use it anymore. So for us, how we think about it is really we want apps to be in the flow of how people are working today. So whether they use chat, so sometimes people prefer chat, and I'm not gonna lie, like I prefer chat. Sometimes people prefer being in a team, right, and collaborating with a team. Okay, that's totally fine. You can have app experiences there too. So we try to accommodate people's preferences, and we know everybody comes from like a variety of backgrounds, and also accessibility needs too. So that's super, super key. So sometimes people maybe, you know, have a hard of hearing or maybe like visually impaired, right? So we want to make sure we're accommodating for anybody who has a different background or sort of different way of viewing a screen or interacting with technology. Maybe they don't use a traditional keyboard. Again, that's very, very important for us. And that's all psychology, right? That's all how people think, how people act, what they do, how they interact with objects in their life. That's really key. I will tell you, in my previous job, so I actually used to work, before I joined Microsoft, I worked for the White House for about 6.5 years. And I worked, you know, with a whole bunch of amazingly, like, incredibly smart people. I was always, like, the dumb one in the room. I'm like, okay, you all know so much about policy and government and everything. And so I managed SharePoint for their environment. And SharePoint, when I first came in, was really hard for people. They didn't understand it, and they actually wanted somebody who could kind of guide them through it. So what I would do, I would like literally sit in people's offices just silently, like in the corner, like doing my own work, but I would hear like how they're working and how they would communicate with one another. And for the most strategic team that was like very important, that was there 24/7, that responded to like Obama's like requests in like a minute's notice, right? If they were struggling, I'm like, hey, like I would run over and be like, tell me what's going on. What was really interesting is that half the time they'd be really frustrated about something else. So, you know, one lady was having issues with her husband's health. Another lady was having issues with her own health. Another, you know, guy was having some issues with his kids. You know, there's all this like weight on their mind, or they were stressed out about work because work was like very stressful working over there. But, so I would kind of say, hey, like, Let's bring it down. Like, what's going on? Like, tell me what's happening with you. And I would try to, I wouldn't say like use psychology, but, you know, just say, hey, like, I'm here for you. Like, you know, use me as like a soundboard. And I would sort of bring their energy level down and then say, okay, now let's go look and tackle the SharePoint problem that you're trying to deal with. And it worked. I mean, it was amazing how often that worked. So that was a really cool thing that I learned again in psychology and sort of like mending that with technology. That was a pretty cool lesson pretty early on in my career. So
how much time you take in order to solve any technical problem or to give a functionality to any application that you work for?
Oh, that's a good question. I hate saying this, but it depends. It depends. You know, I try to, like, usually, like, most of my engagements that I work with partners are about 6 to 8 months. I've been working with partners sometimes, like, some of my partners, I think, are almost 2 years. Again, just depending on what they're building or if they're building new versions. But it totally, totally depends on so many things. Like, if they have a large dev team, things could go a little bit quicker just because they have more people sort of, you know, tackling it. But if there's a, if there's an internal problem, like let's say they have an issue or they want to raise a bug, it really, things do, it depends because how deep does that bug run, right? And like, first of all, troubleshooting it, recreating it, you know, confirming it, writing the bug report, you know, basically escalating it through our own individual channels, having the partner escalate it through their channels, like making sure we have all the documentation usually is what takes the longest time. And then if we finding the right people too, again, because we're 2,500 employees, but a lot of our services integrate with other engineering services. So it's not just Teams. It's like, you know, we've got Microsoft 365 or calling and chat. Like there's so many different things that we integrate Azure, right? So it depends on the issue and how deep that tree goes and how, you know, finding sort of the person that where the problem is at. Again, it depends. Usually we try to resolve things fairly quickly within a couple of weeks. That's usually the longest it takes, but again, it always depends.
So is it possible for you to convert the user requirements into technical solution?
Absolutely. Yeah. Something that we're doing and we're kind of working with partners on this is how do we collect user feedback? Like how do we have an app that maybe is in like a demo or a test environment? How do we kind of get them to use that app, like watch them use that app? We started using also usertesting.com, like working again with partners to make sure they have enough users giving them customer feedback. And then we lay all that out to the partner and sort of say, hey, like here's a feedback. This was a really big struggle for this age group or people with this accessibility need. Like how do we change that? And so we do use that a lot, quite a bit in terms of how we help design or develop products. Not just for apps in the Teams App Store, but for Teams all up. We have a program inside of Microsoft, and I believe customers can actually sign up for it too, where you become sort of this like super duper elite like beta user. And we have entire teams for every single product that does this. They actually share with you like a feature, and you actually go test it. They watch you, they record you, whatever, and then they actually get your feedback. So everything that we create goes through a rigorous testing process, even internally in Microsoft. So for example, in Teams, like I'm in an internal sort of dev ring where everything comes into the development team first, and then it starts going through the rest of Microsoft. So even so stuff for Teams, like the rest of Microsoft doesn't see it until we actually see it and review it, approve it and all that. And then it starts going to Microsoft, then it starts going to beta customers, and then, you know, the general population. So we try to make sure that everything's rigorously sort of vetted before the rest of the world gets it.
So you are in technology from a long time. So what is wondering for you today if you see something that is happening in technology that you didn't expect it before?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, obviously COVID, I never thought the world would be this sort of hybrid or this remote. That's one thing. Also AI. AI is a big, big concept and also thing that we're tackling right now within Microsoft, something that I'm working with partners. And it's really sort of how do we push the envelope here? How do we use AI in a smart way that still also keeps people's privacy, that makes things easier, that is intentional? How do we use that to our benefit? And I think that's going to be the most cool sort of thing I think that's going to come out in the near future. Something that I'm secretly passionate about that a lot of people don't know about is VR. And I know VR was like, you know, big, I think, when Meta was first kind of talking about it. And it sort of kind of took a back burner. I still believe VR for work is going to be huge. I have, you know, don't judge me, I have an Oculus or Meta Quest, as they call it now, right? And for me, like just the value of being able to have sort of a more personal experience in VR has been really, really key. I have a feeling that that's, we're not there yet. I think when the devices get a little bit cheaper, I think we'll grow. But that to me is going to be a huge space as well.
So Microsoft Teams has been gained a lot of users in past few years. So what is working for them? What you people are doing? What magic you are doing in order to make people to use it?
It's the color. It's all the color purple. I'm joking. I think The biggest thing is efficiency of like video and reliability and stability, right? People just want to be able to make their phone calls or their video calls and have everything just work. And so we have a lot going on behind the scenes to actually either dial up or dial down bandwidth or throughput based upon what the user's device requirements are, what the Wi-Fi bandwidth or the network bandwidth is, just to make sure people have the most or the best experience possible. I think that's a huge improvement from Skype. Obviously, Skype, slowly going away. I think that sort of seals people in. The other thing that's really key for us is security, and I think we've made a huge name in the market around security, especially compared to other competitors. We take that very seriously, and that's why the U.S. government uses Teams for the most part is because of that. So I think having those like core capabilities and being really stellar and excelling at those helps people, have trust, that emotional trust, right? And then want to keep on using it. I think that's key. And then from a UI perspective, we're actually improving the UI. I don't know if folks know, but we have a new Teams desktop client that came out recently. For some customers, you're able to use it. Hopefully, if you're in a preview program, you'll be able to use it. If not, you should be able to have it or download it soon. But it's a great sort of brand new UI. It allows users to switch between organizations really quickly and have a multitude of chats in different organizations. It's so much easier to manage your work when it, not only when it comes to where you're at, but also all the other organizations you communicate and collaborate with. So I highly recommend folks to go try it out.
So you have attracted even non-technical people, people who don't have much knowledge in technology. They are using Teams and they are preferring Teams. Not from US, a lot of people from a lot of countries are sticked today. Their organization or their company or their business is working with the Teams. So what, how you improved your service, how you collected the user experiences and you made this global product?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think for us, obviously, like, data is key, right? We want to understand when a user has an issue, right? You can always report a bug. That's super, super important. So if you have a problem even on mobile, right? Like there's the ability to send feedback. Super, super, again, important because that feedback helps us improve the product. So sometimes we'll have like a threshold to say, hey, for Teams, like if this many people have reported an issue, now we know, okay, this is like a bigger issue, a bigger problem. We really need to like solve this in like an immediate time frame because, we know the population that's being affected is large. So we tend to be really good about fixing any issues that may come about. Hopefully they don't happen too often for folks listening to this. I think for us, what's important is really also understanding the market. So we're very good at understanding like what are other, companies doing and how can we make sure that we're keeping up with what people want. And then for us, really like customer feedback is king. Microsoft, we wouldn't be Microsoft if we didn't have customers who subscribe to our products. And so again, like all the administrators who submit trouble tickets or who submit feedback, even within all the apps, not just Teams, again, we take that very, very seriously. We have an entire program of how user feedback is handled within the product. So you'll see like in a lot of places you can provide feedback, like even in Teams, it'll say like in the help section, you can go add feedback. Again, that goes directly to engineering. We have an entire team who manages and triages all of that. And then that essentially goes into the individual dev or feature teams to essentially correct the issue. And when we get that feedback, we plan, we have to, budget it and plan it, but then we plan it in future semesters to say, how do we improve that? How do we make that better? I'll give you an example. When Teams first came out, there was something called the U-bar, and the U-bar is essentially now what you see is like the top sort of bar where it has like all the different like camera, mute, like hand raise, all that stuff, right? The U-bar used to be at the bottom and used to sort of disappear. So it used to sort of like only come on when your mouse would hover over it. Well, we had somebody on the team who had Tourette's syndrome, and because that bar was flashing, it was triggering her Tourette's syndrome. And so it was like causing her to have, an issue. And so because of that, we essentially decided, okay, we're going to keep it, now stable. And then it became stable. And then we realized, okay, people tend to look above because, the end button is at the top. So let's move everything to the top. So we've tried to kind of listen and figure out how do people absorb this data? Where do people naturally go? How do we group things together in a way that makes sense? Just to sort of appease like what our customers want and what they need, because we want to make them happy.
So as a product designer working for different organizations or for different businesses which belongs to different industries, so what difference that you observe when you work for the product which is being used in different organizations? Do you find much difference in the product that they use?
Like, you mean for like a partner organization, like what they use for calling and meetings, or do you mean?
Yeah. The same product used by different organizations, do you find much difference in functionalities?
Yeah, I think, I think there's always like a core like set of ways that people use Teams, I'll say for Teams specifically. What's really interesting in certain industries is that there's always this sort of like key customer or key organization or key partner, right? That tends to determine what the rest of all the other companies do, right? So there's always like, it's almost like the sibling that everybody listens to, or the person, the family that everybody listens to the most. They're like, oh yeah, no, Angela, my aunt, she knows everything. Like, we're going to listen to her, right? I've noticed that like when there's companies who are big in that space, other companies follow what they do. And I've noticed like just a couple of different trends. So for example, like sometimes people think, oh, I just want to use Teams internally, but I want to use another product for external. And again, that's them not realizing, hey, there's a way to have that security model where you can do, you know, internal or external. Or, you know, people say, hey, like, we don't want to use apps because we don't know enough about it, so we're just going to block it, right? Again, it's because, you know, maybe they don't understand the security model of understanding like how we review apps or how we approve apps from a security perspective. So a lot of it, I think, behavior depends on education. And that's why, like, I'm really big on educating user base. That's how I started. I started in the whole Microsoft world by attending user groups. Like, I used to go to monthly user groups and I would just learn because I was like, I want to learn. I didn't know enough about it. And I'm always learning. Like, if anybody ever tells you they know everything about something, they're lying to you, because that's impossible. It's just, and especially with Teams, it is absolutely impossible. Like, I know a lot about my little sliver, but I don't know everything. And so for folks, I think for organizations to have that learn it all culture is super, super key as to how they use the product. Because again, I think how people use it, how they use Teams and also other products differently is again, is education and word of mouth. So that's the other thing too.
So how effectively you use your senses?
How effectively do I use my senses, like my sight, yeah, and with Teams or just in general?
in product designing.
Oh, in product design. Yeah. I think, so we have an entire UI kit, like a Teams design UI kit. If folks don't know about it, if you Bing it or Google it, you know, whatever you prefer, and you go search for the Teams UI kit, you'll find it. For us, what's really big is consistency of color, of font, of like how like icons are used. So we force, you know, our partners to use consistent icons so that they know the share icon is this button, is a square with like an arrow on it. You know, the settings icon is always a gear. We want to keep that consistency with Windows and with other apps so that people don't have to relearn again, because that adds like a psychological sort of like challenge. We don't want people to have a challenge. So for me, making sure that they're following our UI kit is very, very key. Color is key too. You know, some people have issues with certain colors, right? They don't like green, or they, you know, blue makes them happy, right? Blue is generically like a peaceful color. So all of that is very, very key for us in terms of how we design an app. And it goes through our official product design lead. They review and approve every single app design to make sure that it falls in line with the rest of how Teams is designed. So that's something that, again, we're very strict about. We want to make sure our partners are building apps that fit with our ecosystem from a feature perspective, but also from a look perspective, because we don't want people to have to figure out, you know, new things all the time. So
communicating with human beings and communicating with machine computer. So which one is easy?
I would say human beings. Even though I've been working from home for the past 5 years, I do enjoy human connection. Something that's very big for me is that, you know, whenever I go out to dinner with my friends, I'll leave my phone in my purse or like face down on the table. Like, I just want to focus on them, because most of my life is like is this is like technology is video. I love it. And I try to get on video as much as possible so that people can kind of feel my energy. But I'm really big on like human connections. So maybe I'm in the wrong org now. I think I always want to make sure that whatever we're building is going to help be in line with that. Because I think people need it. And I know I need it. That's always, you know, a challenge with COVID. It's like, I think people went and they still are in this like remote world. It was tough for me even before COVID, working from home all the time. It took a lot of adjustment. Like I was going to the office every day and then all of a sudden it was like, nope, I was just working from home. And so, it's something to make sure that like people have routine. Like for me, for example, I always have a routine. I always try to also hang out with friends on the weekend. I have a dog, and so like it gets me out of the house too. So having that balance again is super, super key. Something I tell people to do and something that I do as well is if you have a job where you can be offline on the weekends, Teams on Mobile has this like quiet time where you can set, you know, sort of like quiet time. So it's like snoozes all of your alerts, you know, during the weekend. And I highly suggest that. Like it's super important to unplug and sort of think about other things so that your brain can be recharged for work when you come back on Monday. So highly recommend for people to do that. But to answer your question, yes, human connection, super key. And it's a big one for me.
And you're working in an organization or a company called Microsoft, which has been from a long time helping people and made all the real world people to come into virtual world and gave them that trust and gave them that security for their data and, you know, for their identity and everything. So first technology company, most probably first technology company which impacted the human race or human culture or things in on the planet. So you're working on that company and one of the product of that company. So how you feel when you are working or when you be alone, or have you ever thought that this is the purpose of my life, like I'm doing something for the something for the humanity?
Yes, I think I'm one of the lucky people on the planet that gets to say that I actually enjoy and love my job. I worked, I think, very hard to actually get into technology. I realized in college that I had a very big drive towards technology. My dad works for NASA, so he's an engineer. My mom is a real estate agent. She also does home remodeling as well. So they're very sort of, they are both engineering focused. My mom is also very math focused as well. Both of them are. So I think I had sort of the baseline for STEM, like for getting into technology. I just didn't realize how much I wanted it until like my senior year of college when I was like, uh-oh, I just majored in psychology. Like, how do I get technology? So I was able to find a job. I actually worked for Northrop Grumman. That was my first job. I was hired as an intern. And then eventually I started working with a finance team. And I've been the type of person that I've always like leaned into my gut. Like I've always listened to what my gut says, because my whole thing is that even if you listen to your gut and your gut is wrong, you will eventually course correct. Like eventually your gut will figure it out and become better and better and better over time. So even in my first job, I had an idea for a software program that would make everybody's lives easier. And I was really nervous, but I was like, okay, let me just write some stuff down. And I also talked to some of my developer friends. I'm like, is this possible? And they're like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like got enough like sort of courage to go to the lead and say, hey, I have this idea. And I pitched it to him and he loved the idea. And so then all of a sudden the government's like, yeah, Rima, we want you to help build this app. And I'm like, what? So, like, so I've always sort of like fallen into it or gotten excited by it again through my gut. And so because of that journey and that app having to integrate with SharePoint and just I would read all the time at night, like I would read every book I could, like every online article I could, because I truly was really passionate about it. I would play with stuff on the weekends. I still do play with technology on the weekends. So for me, again, I feel very fortunate that I'm doing something that I love. And I think I've always been about technology, even as a kid. Again, I loved gadgets or I love anything like just new and fun to play with. Like that's, you know, I have a laser engraver in my house. Like I have, you know, Alexa devices all over my house. Like I love technology. So for me, I feel truly, truly lucky that I get to do what I love every day. So.
And Microsoft have data centers even under the water. And yeah, they are thinking, They're always they are thinking beyond humans' expectations. So what is your view on it?
I'm very proud that I work for a company that's always, forward leaning, that's always looking at the future and always very conscious about how we use energy and what we do to the planet too. So we've actually redesigned our Redmond campus to be a lot more energy efficient and sustainable. All of our buildings, like even the ones in DC, they're all designed like that too. I always joke that I have like trash anxiety because like we have like all these different trash bins and I'm like, okay, and I'm standing there, I'm like, which one do I put my trash in? Like I've got a spoon and a cup, and so I always have to figure out because they're very all about like again composting or just recycling and what have you. So even in our buildings, they got rid of paper cups a while ago, so now everything is at like a a mug, like a ceramic mug that we throw in the dishwasher. And so I think we try as hard as we can to make sure that we're not, ruining the planet, that we're actually trying to make better. Again, I'm very, very proud. Microsoft was always a dream for me. I never thought I would ever get into this company. I always thought like I was too dumb or too stupid, or I just didn't have enough confidence, I think, at the time. And then I got in and I realized, okay, no, I can do this. And I had really good mentors, and I still do today, that I rely on. And that helped me sort of understand how do I be my most authentic self and navigate this amazing company. And this company has been great to me. So I've loved the ride thus far. Hopefully they still keep me. But whenever whatever my time is up, my time is up. But for now, I'm having a great time, and I love the company I work for. So, and I have a ton of Microsoft stuff too. You probably can't see it on this side, but I have a ton of like Microsoft stuff, like labeled things. So.
And you said your father works in a space technology company, NASA. So what you
Yeah.
learned from him?
Oh, I'll give you a funny story. So, my father is he's a very senior engineer, and he works with satellites. And his NASA had to get teams, and so it was really funny seeing his experience of switching from Skype over to Teams. And I used to watch him all the time. I'm like, Dad, I want to see you work. And obviously he's of an older generation, and it really educated me a lot on like what that is. So I've learned a lot from my dad in terms of like, hey, like from a team's perspective, like how do older people sort of observe this technology? But from a all up like life perspective, my father's always like been a super honest guy. So I learned integrity with him. He's honest to a fault, and he also used to really encourage me to do science things. So we used to go to a 4-H club together. He also used to drive me to figure skating a lot, when I was younger. And I learned a lot of humility from him. But he's always the type of person, and my mom too, they put so much energy and work, like hard work, into becoming successful people. I don't know if I could have done what they did years ago, moving to a brand new country where they didn't know the language like that. Is huge. That's like if I moved to Japan, I don't know if I could do it. Like I don't think I'd survive. And so I admire them a lot for doing something so big and being who they are today, which is really impressive people. So I try to live up to that standard as best as I can and hopefully make them proud of me.
So when Microsoft is going about the planet and going to use the Microsoft products and services for other planetary species.
Oh, you mean for like aliens? Which
Yeah.
my dad, oh, I always joke. I'm like, Dad, are there aliens? He's like, you've got to be kidding me. He's like, we're not the only people on this, like in this universe. And I'm like, what? I'm like, does that mean there's aliens? Like, I'm gonna be, yeah. I mean, who knows, right? I hope we do. I think we're always trying to do our best in terms of helping whoever, whether it's humans or animals or what have you. We're really big in terms of also emerging markets as well. We give a lot of technology away for free, and we try to make sure that people have the access to our technology. Like there's a free version of Teams, by the way, too, right? Like so we try to make sure that everybody has access to our technology regardless of socioeconomic class. So I think that's really cool. Now whether other life forms fit into that, we'll see. I will say my dog does have a Teams account. Just in case if I need to call him if he's at home and I need to check in on him. So
So at last, what is your observation about my global communication?
your global communication. Is that so?
Yeah, about my
I mean,
work.
I love it. I was actually looking through your entire Twitter feed, and you've interviewed some really interesting people. I think it's phenomenal that you're able to ask deep questions about such a variety of products and services. I think you're like the I don't want to say Oprah, but like you're like this David Letterman or interview person, right, of technology. I think that's really cool. I think a lot of people don't have that ability to ask the right questions to such a large audience. So I think that's amazing, and I can't wait to listen and watch some more of your other previous recordings as well. So yeah, I'm excited. I saw a few on there. I was like, ooh, I gotta make time to watch that.
I also interviewed some a couple of experts from NASA.
Oh, okay, wow. Maybe my dad knows them.
Yeah, so me talking, I did master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in
Nice.
computer science and engineering. Right now I'm doing cloud DevOps engineering work, some projects. So me talking with the experts like you who are working in different technology companies and who are in different levels and who are from different parts of the world. Me talking with experts like you and interviewing you and asking questions, what I'm going to learn and how this experience is going to helpful for me in coming days.
That's amazing. I think you're doing exactly the right thing. Again, I did the same thing too. Like I was in a user group to sort of commit me to learning, and I think you're doing the exact same thing. I think that's awesome. Kudos to you, man. If there's anything I can do to help you, please, please, please let me know, because you are a wonderful individual. So thank you.
So, do you have anything to share with my audience from which my audience can learn from you?
Yeah. So yeah, my tidbits of advice. And I did actually like a keynote a while ago, at a conference, like on sort of like my like nine sort of like principles I live by. I would say, nothing comes easy. Everything takes hard work, right? And it feels better when you've put that effort in. Listen to your surroundings and watch people in your surroundings, right? Like just observe what's going on and sort of make your own sort of observations around that, and find good mentors. Don't have a mentor that's brought upon you just because somebody else said they were good. If they don't feel right, or if that person doesn't feel like a good mentor, don't get mentored by them. Like, right? And also pay it forward too. Mentor other people. So as you rise or as you move up, you got to pay it forward back, because you learn more about yourself in that sense. And then always like speak up. So I've had this sort of like unapologetically way of like saying, I guess, like what I think for the most part, and being sort of not shy at work. That's super key. So just, say what's on your mind, be yourself. Like, don't try to be anybody else that people tell you. Like, if people tell you, like, oh, you don't talk like this way, like, I don't talk like a traditional developer. Okay, fine. Well, I talk like me. That's cool. Like, whatever. People will actually gravitate towards that. People will find that interesting if you are who you are, because they want to know who you are. And I guess the final thing I would say is just sort of, try to, if you learn something, move on. If you trust your gut, like, and you made a mistake again, move on. Like, always try to think of like what's next in terms of like how you can improve yourself. It's, you're never like always, like nothing's ever perfect, right? Things can always be better. I'm always of that mindset. But even if you're always going for the next thing, make sure that you celebrate key milestones. Like, celebrate things. Like, if you get promoted, celebrate if you get like a new job. Like, it's super, super, super important to celebrate yourself and include your friends and family around that. So, those are sort of like some of my key advice things to share with your audience.
Definitely, it is. Your words are extremely valuable, and definitely it impacts a lot of lives. I'm sure, even one person changes because of your words. That is a great contribution that you can do through my platform.
That's so sweet. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is awesome. Thank you.
Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'll share your work in my website as well. People who find my website can see the work that you're doing and can learn from you, can follow you.
Thank you. Yes, that would be amazing. Thank you so much. And
Thank you
kudos. Great
again.
job. You're
Thank
awesome.
you
Have a
again
great
for your
day.
valuable time. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
Have a
you.
good
Thank
one.
you. Bye.